back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
This morning with Professor Jennifer Curtin. Morena, Jennifer, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Rachel.
Hey, it's been a big couple of weeks since we last spoke to you. We've got polls to talk about, local elections, and also some stuff that's going down in universities and what the government's bringing in terms of regulations there. Shall we start with the polls, because that's quite a big one? Labour is not doing so well in the latest polls that are out, and neither is Jacinda Ardern. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so I think there's been a lot of discussion about whether this is really that bad for Labor or whether the media uses polls to kind of create a story.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly like her favourability, Ardern's preferred Prime Minister rating is at 38% in the most recent Colmar-Brunton. So that is down from being in the low 40s. But it's still, you know, 38%, and Simon Bridges is on 9. And we don't vote for our Prime Ministers, increasingly under an MMP system, the leadership is what attracts the party vote, so it does matter. So in that sense, you know, it's not great, but we know through Ihu Mātou, the climate strike, there's been a bunch of the sexual assault allegations inside the party. There are things that some voters might feel she hasn't fronted up to in the way they would have liked. But by the same token, you know, National are doing, they're holding their base. They're at 47%. Simon Bridges, despite only being on 9%, you'd say would be really, like, happy with this, because it sort of slows the challenge that might have otherwise come from Judith Collins and so on. So, and he's certainly been, while Jacinda Ardern's been overseas meeting Trump and, you know, talking at the UN, Bridges has been in China, and the National Party has been quite busy doing some quite clever, perhaps negative campaigning, and also talking up policies that, you know, like might fine parents of children who drop out of school.
Mm-hmm.
These sorts of wedge policies that counter the sort of politics of kindness that the government is allegedly doing. So it's really great news in the Nats. It's really great news for the Greens to see that at 7% they're easily achieving the threshold, and they've still got, you know, new stuff coming down the line on the zero carbon things, you know, in responses to the climate strikes and so on, that might still push that percentage up. But I think, you know, Labor will need to do some work, I think, in the domestic policy context, and drive home the message that they feel that they've achieved certain, you know, outcomes in certain areas, because Ardern has been overseas a lot, and maybe they need to bring her home and help her push the good news stories around the surplus and how that's going to be spent and so on.
Polls quite often seem to show a bit of a two-horse race going on. Do you think that is a useful way of looking at them, or is it better to be looking at how maybe coalitions might be formed with polling or something similar to that?
Yeah, well, I think the reality of MMP in practice, at least until this past election, is that it's been a two-horse race. Like, it's all, like, under John Key, he always had the numbers to be the, you know, for National to form the government, and he formed it with, you know, United Future, Māori Party and ACT, who had small numbers of seats. So very much the major party was the driver of the coalition. This time round, it does look different, and so maybe the polls aren't suitably reflecting the nature of how MMP could work, but I, you know, and it has worked in 2017. But I think, you know, the way in which they talk about the minor parties is, oh, look, if, I think it's more the way they message it. So they go,
mm-hmm.
Oh, if we had an election today, National would be governing alone. Well, the reality is we don't have an election today, and people who are responding to this poll know that there's no election today. So assuming
mm-hmm.
that ACT will and National will form a government easily without needing to do much negotiation is probably not a fair reflection of how it will play out next year.
Well, let's talk a little bit about local body elections, because that's been obviously the massive topic in the last month. So the results are sort of basically more or less all rolled in now. What are your thoughts on this, Jennifer?
Yeah, so there was this big fear campaign or something going on, you know, in the last week of the polls being open, that turnout would be the lowest ever and it was all going to be a disaster. And we know that it's certainly at some pop-up booths on the day and on the days before. We ran out of voting papers, you know, like the one on campus. There weren't enough, you know, ballot papers for people to come and fill out. And that's a real issue, because there might have been more people who wanted to vote but ended up not. But in the end, it really looks like turnout across the country has increased. I mean, it's decreased in Auckland, and there are lots of specific reasons for that, I suppose. But it's not the doom and gloom story that we thought it would be. I mean, it's not great. 44% turnout across the country isn't super high, but it's certainly up, and the diversity of those elected has widened, which is cool, especially lots more young people being elected to local council, and this this might become a trend, and if it does, that would be really awesome for local government, I think.
Well, speaking of young people, our third topic that we want to talk about today is more sort of based on universities. So it's been quite a weird and difficult time across university campuses around the country, especially down in Canterbury. We've seen some really tragic events, and it's great to see that the government is announcing they're going to be regulating standards for hostel care especially. Now, you're an academic. You work at the University of Auckland. What are your thoughts around this kind of regulation? Are you happy to see this rolling in?
Yes, I am. I think, well, I mean, it's a long time ago that I went to university and I never lived in the halls, but when I went to do my PhD at the ANU, and the halls of residence are really important, so, you know, lots of people come to Canberra from other parts of the country, and the residents who helped, the RAs who helped out there were always PhD students, much more mature students, like, the stories of really young RAs having to manage large numbers of students' needs and being across the pastoral care referrals and all of that, it's a really big ask of young people who are also managing their own studies. So I think that the idea of a new code of practice and then implementing it with the, you know, this sort of stick of a fine is an important way to go, but also thinking hard about who, that, you know, the numbers of students to care for vis-a-vis RAs, and who those RAs are, and making that, you know, recognising that that's a really important responsible role, but just that the needs of students and the stresses on young people who are coming into the halls are significantly different than 20 years ago. And that this needs to, you know, that universities are stepping up for their on-campus students, but they've got to think about their duty of care as being much broader than just what's going on campus. And the halls is definitely a part of our remit.
Well, speaking of the residential advisors as well, I completely agree with you. It's a lot of responsibility for young people to take on, especially when sometimes they're only a year or 2 years older than the students that they're looking after. Another thing that's kind of come up in this whole conversation is the amount of remuneration that those residential advisors get. There's been stories of people's pay, I guess, only just equating to their rent for the halls and things like that. Would you like to see changes in that area too?
Well, I mean, it's I haven't looked at the detail of how much, but this is a really important job, and my understanding is that elsewhere overseas it is treated in a way that, like, it's a profession or it's a job. So why aren't we paying it as such? And it's not enough just to discount the rent that they're getting, but also recognise that there needs to be that there's seniority that goes with this. So perhaps not, like, trying to get students who are older and more experienced in terms of their own state of study, so that they really, rather than just the short training, that there's a recognition that there's an experiential element to being a student that can inform the residential assistant, you know, position. So yes, remuneration is an exceptionally important part, because when you read the stories of how the work that these RAs do, you know, sometimes it's the middle of the night. It's all, you know, these they're working hours that that minimum wage earners don't often work, and it's like they're on call, so they have to be remunerated for that.
Absolutely. I certainly have anecdotal stories of just the above and beyond kind of things that residential advisors had to do when I was in a hall of residence. And, you know, they were only second year students or third year students as well. I certainly think we need some changes there. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Professor Jennifer Curtin. Always a pleasure to speak to you. And we'll talk to you again in a few weeks.
Thanks, Rachel.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.